Mayfly time is the pinnacle for most brown trout anglers, and we're pleased to announce our next Ireland on the Fly Masterclass is focusing on mayfly tactics with international angler, guide and renowned fly tyer Jackie Mahon.
On Thursday the 25th of April at 8 p.m, Jackie will be discussing how to make the most of the conditions, the best flies and methods to use, as well as giving his tips and insights from a lifetime of experience.
So, to join us for this masterclass on Thursday 25th of April, just go to www.irelandonthefly.com/masterclass. Tickets cost €10 and all attendees will get a copy of Jackie's notes as well as access to the recording of the webinar afterwards.
And stay tuned for our masterclasses throughout 2024, covering salmon, rivers, lochs, streamers, lures, dries, everything to make you a better salmon or trout fly angler, helping you to catch more this year and to learn from the best. For more information, email us on info@irelandonthefly.com.
Hello and welcome to the Ireland on the Fly podcast, covering the people and places about fly fishing in Ireland. For this week's episode, I speak to the English writer and angler Tom Fort, who has been in love with the River Shure since he was first introduced to it by Niall Fallon in the 1990s. Tom returned to the Shure last September after a 20-year hiatus, realising what he'd been missing out on all this time, and he's vowed to come back after the COVID-19 crisis is gone. I speak to Tom about the Shure, as well as his friendship with Niall Fallon, the well-known journalist, editor and angling writer, and whose son Garrett founded and edits the quarterly Fallon's Angler magazine. I first asked Tom, though, about his latest book, Casting Shadows.
I wanted to do something about, to kind of celebrate my own, all the pleasure and enlightenment that I've had from being on rivers and in rivers and thinking about rivers and dreaming about rivers, mainly rivers, lakes as well. And I thought the way to do that was to look at our relationship, as in our human relationship, with our freshwater fish in all its forms, all its facets, including angling. So there's a big chunk in the book about the kind of birth of angling and how the pursuit of fish for food, for protein, sort of gradually turned into the pursuit of fish for fun, for pleasure, for excitement. But also I cover... there's a lot in it about sort of commercial netting and trapping of salmon and eels, and bits about sort of monastic fish ponds and more contemporary stuff about the evils of salmon farming and the growth of kind of conservation consciousness among the angling community. So it's really a sort of celebration of that whole world and what it's meant to me over my life.
Sounds fascinating, actually. I can't wait to have a read of it myself. How you fished in Ireland, Tom, how do you compare how integrated or how important fishing is in the life and culture of Ireland compared to that in Britain?
Well, I would love to have... I've always said that if I had to go and... if for some reason I was expelled from my home country, Ireland is one or two... other countries where I think I could live, happily, and the water, the rivers, the fishing available in Ireland would be a huge part of that. I mean, I've only ever been to Ireland as a visitor, and I've been on holiday there, but mainly I've come in order to go fishing. And of course, you know, the fishing experience in your country is completely different. It's for a start, if your passion is trout fishing. In this country, I pay, you know, nearly £3,000 a year to have access to really good trout fishing on the chalk streams. I can come to your part of the world and pay what seems to me almost a pittance to fish on the Shure, which is just one of the greatest trout rivers on the planet. I've had hugely happy times over many, many years in Ireland, mostly pretty unsuccessful, but enough in the way of success to sort of bring me back. And I actually came back last September to fish on the Shure for the first time in many, many years. And I was sort of bowled over. It was sort of revelatory to me. I'd forgotten what a phenomenal river it is. And what a, you know, just sitting beside it and looking at it, what an experience that is. If you understand anything about how rivers work, the richness of the river, its setting, and the head of trout in it is just astonishing. So yeah, they're very different experiences, but I will definitely, having come back to Ireland, unless something terrible happens to me, I've sort of made a date in my head not to leave it so long again.
What led you to come back after such a long period of time?
Well, I tell you, I sort of, for quite a few years, I used to fish every year in Slovenia, and I had some wonderful experiences in Slovenia, but for reasons I won't bother to go into, the kind of experience became degraded in some ways. And so I thought, where I'd like to go away for a trip, and I love to fish on my own. I like to fish with friends as well, but I also like to go away on my own. And so reading about the shore and reliving experiences I had, particularly with a very old friend of mine now, long dead, Niall Fallon, a big figure in Irish fly fishing. And I kept the sort of memories of the shore kept on nagging at me. So I got in touch with a guy called Kevin Rowe in Care, and said I was thinking of coming, and he very kindly advised me, and then I came over and he met me and he showed me around. And the weather was boiling hot, really tricky conditions, but yeah, I caught some fish, and it was tremendous.
We'll talk about the Shure in a minute, because the Shure is my own local river, and I know Kevin, and I'm a member of the Care Fly Anglers, and it is an incredible river. And like you said, I think we take it for granted here, especially with being so close to us and how well it fishes. Talk to me a bit about Niall Fallon, how you got to know Niall, because obviously Niall would be very well known to people in the fly angling community over here.
One of my brothers, Matthew Fort, who's a big figure in the food world over here and a judge on TV cooking programs and such like, a long, long, long time ago, he, at a low ebb in his fortunes, went to live and work in Dublin. And he's a keen fisherman, and he and I and our eldest brother did a load of fishing when we were young. Anyway, he went to live in Dublin as a young man, and he was introduced to this distinguished Dublin journalist, Niall Fallon, at some social gathering. And in the way that, you know, anglers, whenever they bump into each other, it doesn't take long for them to get round to discovering the mutual interest. And Niall at that stage, having been a very, very keen fisherman and written a lot about fishing, had actually given up fishing for some reason. And Matthew, my brother, sort of said, oh, come on, you know, you've got to show me around. And so Niall showed Matty around some waters in County Meath and lakes. And then as a result of that, Matthew invited Niall over to fish with us on the Eden in Cumbria, and we all got on very well together. And as a result of that, he, Niall, arranged a couple of epic trips to the west of Ireland, to Delphi and Corrib and all those places. Incredibly unsuccessful they were, generally. But the second of those trips involved coming down to the shore. So I became I was a passionately keen angler, and also because I worked in journalism as well, we got on well on that basis. And he had a great love of fishing books, as did I. And so I went over and fished with him, and he fished over here. And I learned a huge amount from him.
And was the Shure your favourite place to come fishing here?
It was, absolutely. As soon as I can still remember this, we turned up there in Care. He had fished there every year for a long time, and he knew the river pretty well, and he was very friendly with this legendary figure, Leamy Farrell, who lived in Care, who sort of gave instruction to all his disciples who used to come along and ask for advice. And so we stayed at a B&B and went down to this amazing river. Now, it's changed since then. I can still remember when we first visited it, there was a meat factory, a sort of pie factory, I think, in Care or on the outskirts of Care, which used to pour this disgusting stream of sort of meat refuse into the river. And it smelled to high heaven. And the whole, from sort of Swiss Cottage down, the whole bed of the river was covered in bits of fat and gristle and such like. I mean, the tribe didn't mind at all, but it was pretty dire. And so I wrote an article. I was then writing over here for the Financial Times, and I wrote an article about all of this. And then there was a local campaign, and eventually something was done about it. But walking up and down the river, it was impossible not to be amazed by the sheer number of rising fish, fish feeding on the surface, on emergers and dry flies. And already by that time in England, those kind of daytime hatches were beginning to decline very obviously. So the show gave you this idea of this impression of an incredibly sort of rich river, rich feeding, and bloody difficult fish to catch. They were too difficult for me at that time. But I went back a couple of years later with Niall, and we had a great evening on the sedge at Swiss Cottage, and we had good fishing up at Ballycurran, upstream from Care. I just got into my head and wouldn't go away.
It seems to be one of those, like, I suppose people outside of Ireland, they think of fly fishing for trout. They think of Corrib, really, don't they? The kind of the Western Lochs. But the Shure doesn't really...
Yeah, like, and then Sheelin as well, and drifting in boats. And yeah, I did a bit of that. I'm not really that enamoured of... I'm very happy to go out in a boat for a couple of hours, a whole day's boat fishing. I did a bit of it with Niall on Corrib, several outings. They were never particularly successful, and I find the sort of confinement of the boat gets to me after a while. I'd always rather be beside a river and able to sort of to move around. And Ireland has amazing river fishing for trout. I mean, where Niall lived in County Meath, there were three streams within 2 or 3 miles of him. The Deal and the Boyne and the Achelow, which had fantastic, they'd been dredged and mucked around with, but they still had amazing dry fly fishing available. And that is the case all over Ireland, really. That's why I wouldn't mind going to live there, but it's too late now.
The Shure doesn't, and the Shure, in fairness, it doesn't come out, like, for the size of the river and the kind of the choice of fishing you could have on it, like, it's just, it's very, you know, underfished, I would argue, from a kind of an outsider's perspective.
Well, it's such a big river. That's the thing, the depth and the volume and the fact that it is, you know, there are many, many miles of it. And yeah, when I came back in September, and Kevin Rowe sort of showed me around, I sort of remembered Swiss Cottage and Leamy's Lane and such like, but the bits higher up I didn't really remember. And of course it's quite a business going down sort of lanes and tracks and such like to get there. Apart from the Swiss Cottage stretch, which was consistently fished 2 or 3 times I went down there, the rest on the other stretches I didn't see anybody at all. And actually, even at Swiss Cottage, there's loads of room. There are so many fish, and there's such a variety of water that, it could take, you know, if you transplanted it to Slovenia, you'd have hundreds of anglers from all over Europe on it. So, you're very lucky.
Yeah. And in terms of, actually, I'm interested, Tom, in how long was the gap between when you were fishing it with Niall and then when you came back in September?
20 years.
How have you noticed in that 20 years, like, fly life, fly hatches, has that gone down? Has it decreased?
Well, in this country, my country, they've decreased. I mean, daytime hatches are almost, I wouldn't say they're unheard of, certainly, but on the chalk streams down in Wiltshire and Hampshire that I mainly fish, they are an absolute, not even a shadow of what they were 30 years ago.
Did you see any difference on the Shure?
This is why it was so sort of heartening, really. I I went down to a stretch, so this would be just below, it'd be below Ballycurran Bridge, sort of 12 o'clock on a September day, as I say, you know, hot and sunny. And I did a bit of nymph fishing, got a couple of fish, and, you know, there was the odd rise here and there. And then there was quite suddenly, around about sort of 12:30, like somebody flicked a switch, a sort of consistent rise of olives. The fish were almost impossible to catch, but they fished, they fed, you know, consistently for about an hour and a half. Then it tapered off, and then round about sort of 4:30 in the afternoon, I went down to Swiss Cottage, and the same thing, just an odd fish here, and then another one, and another one, and then within 10 minutes or so, a good number of fish sort of feeding consistently on the surface, and I got two or three in the sort of late afternoon, early evening. So, yeah, it was just sort of, I thought, Christ, this is what it used to be like in my country.
Although, in fairness, if you talk to locals, they will tell you that the hatches have declined in recent years.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that's right. And I, you know, maybe I just hit it right, and they probably don't hatch in the. I mean, I can remember Niall and I meeting Leamy Farrell at Swiss Cottage on an incredibly windy day in June, where there were so many olives. It's the only time I've ever tried to fish where the wind was so strong that after you'd cast, the wind took the line off the water into the air. And there were absolute blizzards of olives coming down and being blown in your face and in your ears and such. And I'm sure that's, I mean, you know, modern farming practices, which I, you know, are certainly at the root of a lot of this. Ireland suffers from them as well. I think probably what sort of helps for sure is that, you know, it's so big. You know, it's quite a difficult river to wreck. Smaller streams are probably more adversely affected.
And it's quite a challenging river as well in terms of fly
fishing.
Oh,
gosh, yeah. I mean, it's, and particularly more challenging as you get older, because the other thing is that in a lot of places, the banks are really high. And you come off the bank and you're into water up to your, so above your waist, right next to that. And of course, at my age, I'm nearly 70 now. In the old days, I didn't mind, you know, I would sort of scramble around and in and out and go over my waders and such. I'm not bothered too much about it. But when you get to my age, you know, I use a wading stick. I'm really careful. And getting up a vertical bank out of 5 feet of water. So I was really careful to make sure I checked on a sort of exit point before I fished anywhere. And presentation and such like, you know, it's demanding. You've got to be careful about drag, and, you know, what, and the fly and all the rest of it. So yeah, it's very challenging.
Wasn't it Lord Grey in his book
he doesn't actually identify it by name in his book Fly Fishing, but the best bit in it is, you know, accounts of him staying, I think, probably upstream, somewhere upstream from Caer in the 1880s, I think. And, you know, he reckoned himself, he was brought up in Winchester, caught trout on the Itchen, considered himself to be, you know, a pretty well-educated dry fly man. Went to the shore and he couldn't catch anything at all. And was in despair. And then, and it's a very good tip for us all to remember, was to keep low, and instead of fishing from behind so much, to try and get an across angle so that the fly and only the fly goes over the fish rather than the cast or leader, as we call them now, with the fly at the end. So he got them from fishing from sort of, as it were, sideways on with plenty of slack to get the fly to come. And he then hit gold dust.
That's right. I'm looking at the quote here. There were trout visibly and audibly rising, which had never seen an artificial dry fly. They defeated me utterly. I walked and knelt and waded and labored and perspired under August sun without success. And that was in 1880.
We've all been there, haven't we?
Oh, it's incredible. But yeah, like 150 years later, from
laboured and perspired, and he probably leaves out all the kind of cursing and the less elevated aspects of it. But none of that has changed. You're a very lucky man living down there. I was thinking, well, I went in September last year, and that's quite a good time to go. But I kept on thinking about what it would be like to be out there sort of after supper, sort of late June, early July, where there must be good hatches of sort of odd blue-winged olives and sedges and such like.
What I was finding actually, Tom, was it was actually nearly dusk, nearly dark. You'd think you'd missed it, and then it would just come on for a few minutes.
Yeah, well, I can remember one evening with Niall at Swiss Cottage, and we went down after dinner, so it was quite late, and I waded across the river. He said he fished up the true left bank and I fished up the true right bank, within earshot of each other, and I could just hear him muttering away and sort of splashing and catching. I think I got about 11 fish, pretty much one after another, and I can remember each time I netted one, I leant forward and my scissors fell out of my pocket into the river, and I didn't have the sense to do up my pocket. This happened each and every time, and I waded back. It was completely pitch black, nearly midnight, when I found him, and he said he had lost count at 20. Yeah, there are some very, very... After Niall died, I went back on my own. I think about a year, he died over 20 years ago. The year after he died, I went back to see stay with his widow, and sort of retrace footsteps. So I went down to Caer, and in the evening went up to Ballycurran, the bridge at Ballycurran, and sort of walked. Well, I stopped on the bridge. I got there, I think, about 9 o'clock or so, and there were so many fish feeding. And I thought at that time I had sort of worked out to a degree that when fish were feeding hard in the late evening, it was in the sort of early dusk, it was normally blue-winged olives. And there was a wonderful fly tyer, Alice Conber in Caer, who I used to get flies from. And so I had some good patterns, and I thought, I'm going to make such a slaughter of these poor, simple-minded Irish trout this evening. So I sort of waded in, and you could see the BWOs coming down in kind of squads on the surface. And anyway, so I've covered fish after fish after fish, and absolutely no response at all. By this stage, it was getting quite dark, and I sort of looked down. I thought, what would Niall suggest? And he'd say, just take a moment to think about it when you're making an idiot of yourself. So I looked down, and the surface of the water was completely covered in canis. And it so happened that Alice Comber, that morning, I'd been chatting to her, and she'd said, oh, you know, they're catching a lot of fish on canis. And I didn't really know what canis were, to be honest, but she gave me, I've still got three of them, these flies that she tied on size 26. They were amazing things. And I thought, can I tie this on? Anyway, I managed by an amazing fluke to tie this thing on. There was a really big fish feeding straight upstream from it. And I thought, why would it take this when the surface is completely covered? And of course it did. Immediately, as soon as it came down, up it came. And it broke me, and it was too late to put on another one. So I still feel very aggrieved about that.
talk to me about Niall Fallon, and obviously because you edited that book, Bright Waters.
That's right, yeah. He had produced a book published only in Ireland called The Irish Game Anglers Anthology or something, which so he had done a lot of trawling around, and whenever I saw him, you know, we used to go and look in bookshops and compare what he'd bought and what I'd bought and such like. And this anthology was unknown in England, and it was not very, the production values were not great, so it didn't really do justice to all the work that he had done. And again, after he died, I had a friend, a publisher of fishing books, Merlin Unwin, who used to do a huge number of fishing books, and I had already done a fishing book with him called The Far From Complete Angler. And I suggested to him that an Irish fishing anthology, you know, might work. And he had, by that stage, started publishing the books by Peter O'Reilly about Irish rivers and lochs and such like. And he said, oh, yeah, fine. And then I thought, well, actually, we can do better than. So I got some extra material. I expanded it with a bit more, with some coarse fishing material and some and a bit of sea fishing material. And the result was what I think is actually one of the most sort of handsome looking. I don't think it sold particularly well, but I'm still really, really pleased with it. And anyone who, you know, has a curiosity about Irish fishing writing, of which there is a, you know, there is a lot, and a lot of it's not much good, but some of it is really good. And the way in which certain writers sort of capture the essence of the sort of Ireland of old, rural Ireland, and the landscape and the rivers. It's absolutely full of good stuff. And yeah, I'm still really proud of that book.
No, it is. And it's. I have a copy of it at home as well. And it's. I love those kind of books because you can dip in and out of them, you know.
Yeah, that's right. You don't have to. There's no narrative thread for you to try and to have to keep hold of.
but you're also writing as well, Tom. You're involved with Niall's son, Garrett, in Fallon's Angler.
Well, I'm not exactly involved. I keep a sort of an eye on his activities, yes. Well, I've remained sort of friendly with the family. Niall had a brother, now also dead, called Porrick, who survived him. Porrick was a really big figure in financial journalism in London, and was the chairman of Euromoney, which was and is a hugely important, influential sort of financial analysis magazine. But Porrick was also a mad keen fisherman, although completely useless at fly fishing. He was really only interested in salmon. So I remain in touch with him and the rest of the family. And then and I was aware that this son, Garrett, who now I used to talk about, and I probably, when I was staying there, saw this shambling teenager at some stage sort of going off to fish for rudd or whatever in the canal. And then, lo and behold, he popped up in London and with this completely mad idea to start a fishing magazine. And I did my utmost to dissuade him, quite ineffectually. And since then, I've a subscriber and occasional contributor, and whenever I meet up with Garrett, I tell him which writers that, you know, he really needs to show the door to. But it is a good magazine. I mean, fishing magazines are generally pretty terrible, and the really good ones don't last very long. The best of them from long ago when I was a boy was a magazine called Creel, which was edited by Bernard Venables, and that lasted for about 5 years and then folded. The problem with fishing writing is, as I discovered, having written a lot about fishing, is that you run out of things to say, and then you just start saying the same thing over and over again, and then it's pointless, and you'd be much better off going fishing. Well, Garrett hasn't reached that stage yet. Maybe he will. And also, he hardly ever goes fishing anyway, because he's sort of too busy. So he lives in this sort of fantasy world of sort of make-believe fishing, which is sort of delivered to him by all these writers. But I must say, he makes a tremendous job of production. It's a really his father would tell him that he was an idiot for doing it and would secretly be extremely proud of him.
Well, I think, do you know what, in fairness, it's found its feet over the last year or two in terms of its personality and its quirkiness, because I think that's kind of what you need. It needs to have that kind of clear, definitive personality that's a little bit different, Because, like you said, I think the problem is with fishing, when you're writing about fishing, whether it's fly fishing, any type of fishing, is you end up saying the same things just with different locations. So it's a...
That's it. And you start... And the worst thing is you start going fishing, not in order to go fishing, but in order to have something to write about. And which sort of takes the edge off the pleasure. And, yeah, I think it's... I mean, I wouldn't... You know, it's a younger man's kind of pursuit. I wouldn't want to do it myself. But I admire him for doing it. And I'm just looking at it now. I've got a big stack of them here, and it just looks good. It looks different, and I know the people I've got to take out subscriptions say, you know, most of them really appreciate it.
Mm. And in fact, Niall's writings in it are great as well. I'm trying to get him on the podcast. He's a busy man between the day job and doing the magazine, but I do want to get him on to talk about the magazine.
Yeah, you've got to get him. I mean, he doesn't know anything much about fishing, to be honest. He doesn't know anything. I took him down to the shore. We went down. We were sort of flooded off after one evening, but we went down and I said, look, come on, Gary, you've got to learn how to cast a fly. Your father would be ashamed of you. Because he really only knows what to do with a float and maggots and such. And not that there's anything wrong with that. I am not a fishing snob in any way, shape or form. But anyway, we never got a chance. I thought, I've got to try and steer him away from all these sort of smelly baits and wriggly objects. But there was then the most tremendous deluge, and the river came up about 4 feet, and that was the end of all fishing.
Tom, we'll just finish up. I want to ask you about your writing. I'm a non-fiction writer myself as well. And I'm just looking at the breadth of topics that you've covered from lawns.
Lawns, eels, the weather.
The weather.
Boating down the River Trent in a punt. I did a book about travels in Eastern Europe, which actually had quite a bit of fishing in it. I fished around sort of Poland, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Romania, first of all in 1990 and then again in the 2000s, and did a very unsuccessful, commercially unsuccessful book about that. I've covered all sorts.
The Far From Complete Angler?
Far From Complete Angler, that was the first thing. That was published by Merlin Unwin, and that was really a collection of stuff that I had written mainly for the Financial Times, but also various magazines, which I collected, and it also had a chunk of stuff of the fishing I had done in Eastern Europe in 1990. I travelled around 3 months after the Berlin Wall came down, and met a whole load of anglers, and was looked after by anglers, and taken to obscure rivers and streams in lovely sort of unknown locations, then unknown locations. So it was a sort of collection of previous stuff. All the others have been kind of commissioned and written as one, you know, as a sort of single narrative, really.
Any particular favourites from the ones that you've written?
Yeah, the one that was most unsuccessful, the Book of Eels. So eels I remain fascinated by eels. And funnily enough, that book, which was a complete flop when it came out nearly 20 years ago, is about to be reissued. My publishers, who've done Casting Shadows, this book, said, oh, we should bring out the eels again, because its time might have come, who knows. So I did a new introduction for it. But to do that book, I travelled all over. I made two visits to Loch Ness in Northern Ireland to go out with the eel fishermen on the loch and to see the eel trap in operation on the river coming out of Loch Ness. I went to the States, I went to Italy, I went to France, I went to Denmark, I went all over the place. Talking to eel fishermen and or experts, people who devoted in ridiculous amounts of time and effort to working out what remains, you know, one of our the behaviour, one of our most mysterious and fascinating creatures. And it's very reassuring. That book came out 20 years ago. And in the intervening 20 years, despite the fact that people have gone on studying the eel and all research programs, all the rest of it, that much about it is still unknown, and long may it continue.
How do you convince your publisher, the publishers, to publish such?
I don't know. They're very gullible.
For you, is it a case of, you know, you come up with a topic, you know, you're looking for these kind of quirky ideas?
Mostly. I did the most successful, commercially successful book I did was about the A303 Highway to the Sun, which was a sort of, it was a look at this road. It's the road that goes past Stonehenge. And I did a book about, not about its engineering, but about the history of the road, but also the way in which it sort of connected different landscapes and through different times. And the book was extremely successful, and in fact, it's still selling. And that was not my idea. It was suggested to me, and I thought it was a really stupid idea to begin with, and then I fell in love with it. And it became a fascinating book to do and was a lot of fun to do. And I, among various things, I walked the entire length of the road, because which was no fun at all, but it was very... You see things when you're walking that you don't see when you're in a car or even when you're cycling. But all the others have been ideas of mine.
What's next? Have you any plans for next?
I would just say, in addition to that, as a result of which I've made virtually no money out of any of them. Next, I don't know, I'm nearly 70. Each time, it's a very exhausting business, producing a book. I get very anxious about it. So I'm extremely anxious at the moment because the book is just out, and because all the bookshops are shut and there are problems with distribution and such like, I think it's going to be very hard even for people who want it to actually get hold of it. But I mean, that's just one trivial aspect of this sort of catastrophe that's overtaken us all. But each time I do it, I think, do I really want to do all that again? And then something starts sort of nagging at me, and I get down to it. So, yeah, there are sort of things that are nagging at me. I certainly won't write anything about fish or fishing again.
Oh, really? That's it? You're done for it? You've covered all the
bases? I've done it. I'll probably, you know, I don't mind. I'm very happy to write something for Fallon's Angler every now and then, but I don't think there's room in the book reading world for yet another fish book.
Well, we'll keep an eye on whatever you choose to write, Tom, in the future. But if people can't get a copy distributed at the moment of Casting Shadows, they can, of course, get the Kindle edition. So I know it's not the favourite probably way for people to be reading a lot of the time, but look, there are options there, so if they do want to try and get their hands on it...
That's right, of course. If someone's really determined, they'll find it. They can work at it.
Oh, perfect. Well, Tom, I tell you what, when you come over to Ireland, when we get through all this madness...
I'm definitely on my way, and when I come again, I will definitely sign up with the Care Anglers, £20 a day, and to stay in that... rather delightful, sort of slightly faded town is such a great place to be. I'll look you up,
and we'll do another interview from the riverbank. I think that'll be even better.
Sure.
Brilliant. Tom, thanks a million. And for everybody, it's Casting Shadows: Fish and Fishing in Britain by Tom Force. It's his latest book out, so do try and get hold of it, and do also look through his back catalogue, from Book of Eels, Downstream, Village News, A303, Channel Shore. I could go on, but have a look for yourselves. We've plenty of time now to be reading, so no excuses. Tom Ford, thanks a million for joining me.
It's been a great pleasure. Thanks.
My thanks to Tom Ford for joining me on the show. I'll be back next week with another episode of Ireland on the Fly. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast from. You can also keep up to date on IrelandOnTheFly.com, as well as on Instagram at IrelandOnTheFly. In the meantime, stay safe, and thanks for listening. Mayfly time is the pinnacle for most brown trout anglers, and we're pleased to announce our next Ireland on the Fly Masterclass is focusing on mayfly tactics with international angler, guide and renowned fly tyer Jackie Mann.
On Thursday, the 25th of April at 8 p.m, Jackie will be discussing how to make the most of the conditions, the best flies and methods to use, as well as giving his tips and insights from a lifetime of experience.
So, to join us for this masterclass on Thursday, 25th of April, just go to www.irelandonthefly.com/masterclass. Tickets cost €10 and all attendees will get a copy of Jackie's notes as well as access to the recording of the webinar afterwards.
And stay tuned for our masterclasses throughout 2024, covering salmon, rivers, lochs, streamers, lures, dries, everything to make you a better salmon or trout fly angler, helping you to catch more this year and to learn from the best. For more information, email us on info@irelandonthefly.com.